listening to The People's Show.
You come at the King, you best not miss.
Left circle, Besser, one time slot shot, he scores. Brock Besser beats Jordan Binnington on the power play, and the Canucks are up 4-0.
With Seth, Dan, and Randeep.
The biggest thing to hit Canada because the Maple Leafs suck.
On the official home of the Canucks.
Goes all the way down the ice, here's Pettersson after it. He's got a chance at a breakaway. Pettersson in clean, is tripped by Murray, but he scores. Tiki Pete comes out of the box and puts the puck into the back of the net.
Sportsnet 650.
Happy Friday. It's the People's Show. You're listening on Sportsnet 650 and your favorite podcatcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Play. Subscribe, leave a review. It means the world to us. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, Randeep Janda. Here with you, get in touch with us on the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650, at Dan Riccio underscore, at Randeep Janda, and at Satyar Shah is how you connect via Twitter as well. Never a dull moment in Canucks land, and today is no different. We heard from the captain, Bo Horvat. We heard from Jim Benning as well, the general manager, and we have... Nothing is set in stone in a pandemic world, but we do have at least a hope and a chance, a good chance, that the Canucks get back to the ice Sunday against the Maple Leafs. It will be a 4 o'clock start, and of course you'll hear it right here on Sportsnet 650. Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing well. Like you said, never... a shortage of things to talk about when it comes to your Vancouver Canucks. And when Jim Benning speaks, and even when Bo Horvat speaks today. So there's controversy or assumed controversy and all the other things going on. So just another day in Canucks Nation, guys.
Yeah, it's sunny outside, Sat, but some really interesting comments that seem kind of clouded, right? If I'm not mistaken. But it was good to hear the players' perspective. And important to hear what they're going through and all of that. But yeah, there's a lot of questions that come out of that availability, not only from Bo Horvat, but also, of course, Jim Benning.
So where do we start with this? You know, it's of course, it's not an easy situation. And it's very easy to be critical of how it has all been handled. But... how much of this is real and how much is overblown? How much is the organization in turmoil right now, if that's the right word for it?
I think there's a lot of reading between the lines that's going on right now, right? But I do think this entire season, it's been a trying season. A lot of things have occurred and a lot of things they've had to deal with. And it's been really touch and go a lot of the parts of this year. Now, with this situation, and we'll play the clips coming up in a bit from Elliot Friedman, who was on Sportsnet 960 to fan out in Calgary about the Canucks and where this might lead this offseason. But it's very clear that this year hasn't gone the way anybody wanted or anticipated. And I'm not quite sure what exactly occurred here and how much of this is players against the team itself or players against the league or players against the PA. Because as much as, yes, there might be players who are not happy with how things have gone, generally speaking, the sense I've been getting here is that the team internally knew how the players felt to some degree. Now, if we want to sit here and say maybe somebody should have came out and said something before JT Miller, maybe somebody should have taken this by the horns or instead of that happening. But one of the things that came out today, and as far as I know, this is true, talking to league sources, talking to people in with the team, That medical examination that happened yesterday, whether JT Miller spoke or not, or whether Jim Benning or Francesco Aquilina or whoever wanted the team to play or not, if the medicals would have came back the way they did yesterday, they weren't going to play anyways. So as much as we talk about the protocols being bad and all that sort of stuff, with the way these guys were feeling, they were never going to be medically cleared by the doctors yesterday anyways. So I think that hangs over this. And with that being the case, it makes you kind of wonder how much of the stuff that's actually going on is real or because there's been an information vacuum where people are trying to piece things together without the full picture.
Well, and really that's the thing here, because there's going to be a lot that, you know, in Jim Benning's words, a lot that we don't know behind the scenes. But I think, you know... if we look at reputationally for the Canucks right now, mm-hmm. One thing is for sure. There's a lot of noise. There is a lot of noise about this organization and various topics. And that's generally not a good thing. And that's why I think, you know, the details matter in these sort of conversations, because we're dealing with health. We're dealing with players trying to stand up for what they believe is, you know, their health. And for all we know, maybe the organization was as well. Maybe there's a bit of a miscommunication at some point. What that is specifically, we don't know. But one thing is for sure, guys, reputationally, this last year, there's been a lot of noise around the Canucks. And you can put that back to the lack of communication between maybe management and impending UFAs or UFAs, or the coaching situation that is currently going on. There just seems to be a lot of noise around this organization. And that generally is not a good thing, because it does really put a microscope on what is going on with this team. I know it's been rough from a health perspective, and that's what we should be focusing on here and now. But if you look back the last year, it's been less than ideal from a Canucks perspective.
We're going to break down a lot of this. You're going to hear from Jim Benning. You're going to hear from Bo Horvat. But just to add to that, and Sat, you mentioned Elliot Friedman and what he had to say on our brother station over in Calgary, Sportsnet 960. Here is Elliot Friedman. Josh, it's the second clip. I believe it's a little over 2 minutes. But it's Elliot Friedman speaking to just how much this could change things around for the Vancouver Canucks.
You know, the fact that Miller went public like that, obviously it says to me that he, and he's probably not the only one, I wouldn't be surprised if Miller kind of did it, because he's a blunt guy and he knew he wouldn't be afraid of saying like things like that on behalf of his teammates. I just wonder, you know, where's this all going to go? Is it going to lead to any more change? Is it going to, are players unhappy? Is the organization unhappy? I just think that we're still seeing where this is going to unfold. And, you know, I had another coach call me last week and say, you know, he thought that the Canucks had a moral obligation to extend their coaches now. And, you know, I don't know how everybody there feels about that. I don't know how the coaches feel about that. You look at the trauma of the past couple weeks there, and you wonder what it could mean for the way some of the choices that everybody there is going to have to make and how to proceed in the future.
And so this is the backdrop in which they will negotiate two of the most important contracts of, you know, the next 5 years in Pettersson and Hughes, what those second deals look like. Wow.
You know, I think it's, you know, like, the world is not an ideal place, Ryan, right now. It's a challenge. You know, Pettersson's been hurt. We don't know when he's going to play or if he's going to play the rest of this year. You know, I just think that, you know, anyone listening to this can think about the strain that this has caused in their own lives and their own businesses, right? I just look at, you know, what I just can't imagine that going through that. Like, I don't know if Pettersson feels differently. I don't know if Hughes feels differently. I don't know if the organization feels differently. I just, you can't help but look at the past couple of weeks and say, okay, like, we've been through a lot here. What does it all mean? And I don't think we know all the answers to those questions yet. I have no doubt that the Canucks want to extend Hughes and Pettersson. They've blocked a segment of their cap space to do it, somewhere around $15 million. I don't think that changes at all, Ryan. I just think that I think the organization's been through a lot, and we'll see what that means.
There is Elliot Friedman on 960, and the organization has been through a lot. Could it mean more changes coming? You know, we've seen what went on with the Buffalo Sabres, right? They lost 18 games in a row. They became the laughing stock of the league. And not a lot of people connected it to their COVID outbreak, but it was just like, hey, man, everything's falling over in Buffalo, and what a gong show that is. Is it starting to become similar, where people are looking at the Canucks and saying, man, I don't know if I want to work for that organization? That's my worry coming out of this. Is this the type of reputation that comes along with a situation like this?
I think every team, Dan, has to always worry about its reputation to some degree, because you're always trying to sell not only your players on this being the place, or at least your best players on this being the place to be, but like you said, you are trying to show the rest of the league that this is a marquee destination. Now, how much of what's happened is their own fault, is the pandemic year, and all these sort of things? It's hard to ascertain exactly how much blame should be placed on everybody, but it's very clear this season has put a lot of strain on a lot of people, and people haven't been happy. And hey, as you would expect in a year like this, and how as bad as the Canucks have been and how much they've struggled, that, yeah, things have not been rosy in that locker room. Things haven't been great. Not everybody's on the same page. They haven't been very happy about things. And I wonder what Elliot is alluding to is, when you go through a season like this, when everything wrong can go wrong, it also shows you, you know, how people deal with this situation. And I wonder, from an organizational perspective, if they've changed their opinions on certain people based on how they've handled or how this whole situation has gone. I mean, it's no different than a regular season, but this year may have been even more revealing. And when you look at how some certain guys felt about certain things and the things that have come out and things people have been upset about, like, it's been a lot there. Like, this offseason didn't go the way they wanted to. I know the players were confused to some degree. I know the season didn't go the way they wanted it to go. And the COVID situation, not necessarily the organization's fault, but you could see what happened with Gaudette. You know, he's no longer there. There's a lot that transpired, and I'm not sure it made everybody look very good. And that's the thing here, you know, Randeep, like, not, and nobody really looks good in a situation like this.
No, and it's tough. It's tough to predict COVID and all of these things. No question, you know, there's an element of nobody could have predicted stuff like this. But what makes this a problem for the organization is there is a history of, you know, drama, right? When we're talking within the organization, the Jim Benning, Trevor Linden era, that ended in disgrace in a lot of ways. So anytime there's drama or there's noise around an organization, you look to the past to a certain degree and say, is there a history there? And yes, with the Canucks, unfortunately, there is. They've done some amazing work in the community, you know, whether it's the Canucks for Kids or, you know, I know they're celebrating Vasaki next week as well with that game. And that's really important. And that's the business side of things. But I think from a hockey operations perspective, yeah, anytime a little bit of noise happens in this organization, we always think back to the past because there's a recent history there. And listen, that's a fair critique based on that. Your reputation lives with you and it kind of comes with you until you show otherwise. And for a couple of years here, the Canucks did that. But this year, coupled with bad luck, I'm not saying this is, you know, brought upon entirely by the team. Obviously, the circumstances of COVID and what's going on, and nobody could have predicted this, definitely has a role there. But there are, you know, potential issues with it. Communication, Sat, is something that you've talked about for a long time, going back to last, you know, offseason. So, yeah, reputationally, even though you've got, you know, two really, really good players in Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes, and this time last year, I remember talking about how those two guys would all of a sudden get maybe value contracts coming into Vancouver. Maybe this would make Vancouver a go-to destination where players are saying, hey, the Dan Hamhuis deal from way back when, maybe you'd see those again in Vancouver. A year later, obviously, I'm thinking a little differently based on what's happened in Vancouver the last year and a bit, where reputationally this organization has taken a hit.
And, you know, part of me just because of the whole situation, like, look, just look at the week's events, right? We get a Canucks schedule and it's pretty alarming, like, wow, okay, they're gonna play all these games right away, 3 and 4 nights right out of coming out of this situation. But it goes back to what we've been talking about through the week. This was agreed upon by, you know, players, by the team, by you know, the NHL. You know, they all went through this process and they knew that there was still a chance that Friday's game may not happen if the Canucks aren't ready to go. And, you know, as much as, you know, I believe there is some level of disconnect and there could have been things that could have been done better from a communication standpoint within the organization and through to the media and to the city and to the league. But I do feel like because this is such an unprecedented scenario with the variant and all the things that they went through, no team had been hit quite as hard as this. Like, there's a lot here that's unfortunate circumstance as well. And I know people are going to call me as a shill for that, but this is what the entire last year has been about, is we're dealing with this thing on the fly and how to deal with it. And we're going to make mistakes along the way. That's kind of the virus. That's the story of the pandemic.
It is. I mean, I think to the larger picture, yes. I mean, the story of the pandemic. But it's also, I think the way you got to look at things, and I think this comes down to the very top of the organization, and this is what happened this offseason. I think this is how this whole season started off on the wrong foot. And there are things you can be critical of, but certain things have happened, like you just mentioned, pandemic-related, that I was like, okay, maybe they could have been more precautious with this, or maybe that could have been different or whatever. But I don't sense that those are necessarily the things that, from an organizational standpoint, were the real failings of this season. Like, it all comes down to the big picture and what each thing means in that big picture. But when you look at where they were last season, this was a team that went deep in the playoffs. They went and traded for Tyler Toffoli. That offseason, they signed Tyler Myers. They signed Michael Ferland. They signed Jordy Benn. They traded for JT Miller. They show so much ambition. And then, yes, the pandemic hits. And yeah, I mean, to some degree, that's out of your control. Economic realities. Everybody has to deal with it, right? Well, all of a sudden, there were restrictions in place. The team was not as financially ambitious as they were in the past. It was very clear. Management had a plan they wanted to execute to keep Markstrom, keep Tanev, keep Toffoli. But they didn't get the go-ahead to do the things necessarily from a financial standpoint to make those things happen, whether it was to go over the salary cap, LTIR, or buyouts. They weren't given the green light to it. So all of a sudden, the guys on the team felt like, we're ambitious, we're trying to go deep, and now the rug's been pulled from under us. And yeah, we signed Holtby, yeah, we went and got Nate Schmidt, but it's not the same team. Then you get off to a bad start, and the sniping starts happening, and it comes down from overall leadership and a directional change that happened at the top of the organization. And when those things happen, the players, most likely earlier this season, from my understanding, some of them were confused by what happened. Then things start snowballing, you start getting down on yourself, the leaders are different, so everything started falling apart, but it all started with how the offseason unfolded. And as much as you want to blame management for the mistakes over the past 7 years, and there are plenty we can talk about, they also were given certain restrictions they couldn't navigate properly. And it was hard for them to try to put the team together the way they did. So that's where it all starts from. A change of ambition, a really rough offseason, and players feeling like they don't know where the team is headed.
Well, Sat, what does, I think, most fans and generally players, any employee, prefer stability, knowing where you're going, having a sense of direction? And I ask this question, long-term, what is the most important thing for the Canucks? Not necessarily the team, but the organization. Does it have its house in order? Is that stability or that needed structure there long-term? Because when you talk about being able to make investments, and I understand this is not the first line of business for all NHL owners. They make their money elsewhere. And making money in the NHL, that doesn't necessarily happen. Sometimes you take some heavy losses, and that's what's going on right now in the NHL. But if you get involved in the game of team ownership, that's kind of the game. But long-term, the big question is, does the organization have the structure needed to move beyond this point? Does that create confidence in this fan base? And most importantly, in the short term, and even beyond this season, does that create confidence within the player group behind the scenes? Those guys that are in that locker room, some of them will be on that team next year. Do they feel confident heading out of this season? Because it's taken a hit clearly within that room. And that's not only limited to the Vancouver Canucks. I'm sure other teams have had to, deal with the situation as well. Maybe they're not as feeling as stable as they want to. But I think that's a huge question for this team is that, yes, they had ambition last year. This year, it took a serious hit. And we saw that with the lack of investment. But moving forward, do you have your house in order? Can you instill confidence in the fan base? And most importantly, right now, with a lot of those leaders in that room, by the looks of it, it seems like there's some work to be done there as well.
And that's kind of the big thing is like, does your core kind of buy into what you are selling mm-hmm. as well, right? And I think that's kind of the question mark that we're all kind of having is, people are making a lot of Bo Horvat's comments today. And when asked the support he got from management and ownership, he kind of avoided mentioning management and ownership. So, immediately people start reading between the lines. Are players upset with the organization as a whole?
Well, okay. So for those that may have missed it, let's play that clip back. So to be clear, Bo Horvat was asked what he thought about the way management and ownership and how the organization by Thomas Dranz have helped the players out. And here is the clip and how Bo Horvat reacted to that question.
Now, we were obviously talking about it as a team before he went and shared it on, in his interview. But, we're collectively talking about it and just obviously reaching out to our teammates to see how they were feeling. No, it was the biggest thing. And if they felt like they're going to be ready to go on Friday, and a lot of guys obviously were feeling the same way as JT was. And you know, he obviously expressed how he felt and how basically spoke on behalf of the team of how we all felt. And I think it was needed and kind of got the ball rolling.
So that's not actually the clip that we're talking about. We'll try to find it and play it back. But regardless, he was asked specifically about what he thought about the help the team had given, gotten from the organization, management, and ownership. And he went on to answer the question, talking about the fans and support from around the league and other players. And I get it. And if you just take it at face value, it looks like he's avoiding it and he's trying to say something about management. But the one thing I keep coming back to is Bo's been in touch with management quite a bit recently. And the whole Tanner Pearson contract, I'm not saying it was because of Bo Horvat, but he wanted it. Like he talked to them about it and he wanted Tanner to stay. They signed Tanner Pearson. He was very happy about it. And it's not in Bo Horvat's MO to go out there and slag management. So I don't know how to take him because it doesn't fit his MO. But on the surface, that's what it comes off as. When you ask directly about a certain thing and you answer with something else. Did he understand the question? Did he hear it properly? I'm not sure. But on face value, I can understand why people look at it and say, is he trying to say something here?
Yeah, the comments or the non-comments. In this market, they're going to get play, right? That's what happens in Vancouver. Whether the omission of the organization was deliberate or not, we don't know. We can't go into Bo Horvat's mind and, you know, read his mind on that perspective. But in this city, absolutely. And it could be as simple as Bo Horvat going through the list and making the fans and making families and friends and other players a priority. And that's why maybe he left the organization off. It could be as innocent as that. Maybe there's a message there. I don't, you know, want to act like I know the answer to that. But obviously in this market, when something like this happens and JT Miller speaks and then that omission is there, it's going to get your attention. But Sad, I'm with you. Like Bo Horvat has not been that guy in the media to really call out organizations or even teammates for that matter. He's always a, you know, saying the right things kind of guy. So this doesn't really jive with his personality. Even behind the scenes, he's a more understated leader. He's not going to necessarily light people up in media or even, you know, from things you hear behind the scenes, he's not that guy. So from a character point of view, it doesn't make sense to me. But when you don't say anything and you know, there's comments or non-comments, it's anybody's guess.
Here is the clip from earlier today with Bo Horvat.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. Like the amount of support we got, you know, from, you know, the fans reaching out, our families, different people around the league, was amazing, and friends and family. And, you know, you need that kind of support to get through times like this. And you know, me personally, I was, you know, I felt really supported and people were always thinking about us and sharing that. So I'm again, we're really grateful for that.
So there is the clip, and Bo was asked about support from specifically management and ownership, and that's what he had to say. And look, you know, from what we've seen play out over the week, you know, I think there's a general anger towards the situation from all involved. Maybe anger is the wrong word, frustration, and maybe fingers are being pointed, but that's kind of human nature. It's just natural to be frustrated about how this has played out. Players' families have been infected, and that also plays into a lot of frustration. But there's also, you know, Jim Benning speaking after did mention that, you know, he, when Miller was speaking, he and Horvat had been in contact. He had been in contact with the players, and John Sanderson as well, the head trainer, as to where things were and how players were feeling. So whether that is a cover up, I don't know. But I do feel like, yes, there's frustration within the organization, players included. I think that's obvious, but I don't know if it's like this big, you know, well, everything's falling down around and players are pointing the finger at ownership and things like that.
Do I think something is amiss to some degree? Yeah. Do I think that, you know, overall that management is too thin? Do I think that there may be too much influence at the very top? I do think there are certain things like that that have to be squared out. Hey, man,
100%.
You guys know me. And there's a lot of things I've reported and talked about over the years, a lot of things, especially this year, that I've been critical of as well. It's kind of like the trade deadline, though. It comes down to each situation, you have to evaluate it on its own to understand how it fits in the big picture. And this entire situation with the COVID stuff, I know there are certain players that feel a certain way, but it's not like every single guy feels the same way. you can't speak for the entire group feeling the same way. And I think that's one of the things maybe Friedman was alluding to, that it's been an eye-opening experience and there may be other things happening. Like, it's not like there's a grand consensus. Like, things haven't been rosy within that room. They're not all on the same page. Yes, they're happy that JT Miller spoke out because they're all feeling like we haven't played in 23 days. Even if I'm not sick, or I don't think I was sick that bad, like, just from a pure health and athletic standpoint, I can't gear up and with one practice and play a National Hockey League game. That's just not realistic. So that's one thing. But I do think we got to be careful in terms, in situations like this, not to make an overarching point about every single player feeling a certain way about the organization as a whole. Like, I do think that's way too simplistic to look at it. And as much as there are things to be critical of, and yes, I get the 7 years and a lot of stuff we can sit here and be and dig through and talk about how bad this organization has been from a management perspective, I get that. But you also can't take things out of context to make a point. And I think we got to be careful with this situation that's this fluid, with so many different players feeling a different way, to not feel like there's a grand consensus and a mutiny going on necessarily within the team.
Well, Sat, a key part there also is that watching that, and if you heard Bo Horvat and didn't watch the video of it, you could tell he was beat, like physically beat. It had taken a mental effect, the mental side of things. When your family's going through this, when you've had to go through this process yourself, when we're like, imagine being in a press conference after you've gone something like this, you're still figuring out how you feel, whether you're going to be able to play. You've got your stresses with it from a family perspective. If somebody missed something or forgot to list something, I'm a little bit more lenient on it based on the fact that this person just went through COVID, man. Like, physically beat. You could see Bo Horvat not looking all that great. He was asked about losing weight during this entire process as well. So I'm going to be a little bit more lenient on this and be, hey, if he had an omission, the man's been going through a lot. He's had to watch his kid potentially be, you know, exposed. His wife was exposed and she was feeling, you know, rougher than he was. So I'm willing to cut him a little bit of slack, not knowing the full story here. So yeah, it's very, very tricky situation because these are individuals that are dealing with something, right? We can't forget that.
It's a lot. And, you know, there's a thought once they get back on the ice, maybe, you know, things kind of settle down a little bit and you reassess at the end of the year when it comes in the next month. 19 games in 32 days now as opposed to 31, but also the Canucks schedule from the off is a little bit more spread out. They'll play every other day for the next week after they start on Sunday, and then they'll really ramp up as they get closer into May. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. Keep your thoughts coming in on the Dunbar Lumber text line. The smart alternative is at Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. When we come back, Yannick Hansen will be joining us, former Vancouver Canuck. It is the People Show on Sportsnet 650.
You're listening to The People Show with Sat, Dan, and Randeep on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Yeah, it's The People Show here on Sportsnet 650. Still lots coming, and a lot more things to talk about with the Vancouver Canucks as well. Elias Pettersson may not return this season. That was a little nugget that Jim Benning dropped earlier today. The plan is still to play all 56 games, and Jack Rathbone getting the call-up. What can we expect from the young defenseman? Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. And the good news is there will be, we expect there to be, a game on Sunday against the Maple Leafs. And, you know, it's not a big thing, but clearly the players, once they got back to the ice and they realized, hey, why are we playing two games in less than 24 hours, Friday, Saturday? They made the probably good decision to at least space out their start, so they're not, you know, overrun immediately coming back from this long break.
And that's what needed to happen. Listen, they have to play the games in terms of finishing this season and their obligations, and we'll ultimately see if they do finish the season, you know, and they play all 56 games. But the whole idea of having them play with one practice after, you know, over 20 days off, that just seemed like way too ambitious and did not seem realistic. And if the league was holding firm on that and it needed, you know, JT Miller speaking out and doctors coming out and saying this is unsafe, then that's a league problem. And they're the ones that were maybe pushing a bit too hard. But it never made sense from a medical standpoint to force these guys into a situation so fast. But as you can see, they're still going to play 19 games in 32 days, but they avoid back-to-backs for the first week back, and they get a few days of practice in before they play. How much does that help them in terms of injury? We'll find out, but they still have to play 19 and 32, and that's not going to be easy.
Let's bring in our next guest, former Vancouver Canuck, Yannick Hansen. Thanks for this, Yannick. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. The Canuck schedule, obviously the players thought that they needed to at least get a little bit of a slower start out of the gate. Tell me, like, just, you know, from a regular training camp perspective, how long would it take you to feel like you were in game shape coming out of the off season?
When I was 20, 21, I was ready right off the bat. When I was 30, it took me a lot longer. It takes time to get situated, get up to game speed, all these little things. So it's a lot of it hinges on the individual player. Again, what they've been able to do. Where have these guys been sitting for the last 3 weeks? Do they have an opportunity to work out at home? What does it look like? Again, I can't tell. So it's very, very individual, where normally, you know, everybody has the same opportunity to train, to get ready. But this case is just like, yeah, it's definitely interesting to see what happens here.
Yannick, based on your experience, was the lungs, the breathing, was that the issue, or was it the danger of the soft tissue injuries?
Well, you're not up to speed, and you're going to be running into teams here that have been playing 10 games while you've been sitting still on your couch eating chips and watching Netflix. It's dangerous. There's no question about that. The game is so fast. And again, you're off by half a second, you might get hurt. And again, it's very hard for outsiders to judge what's safe and not safe. But like, players will tell you that as soon as you step away from the game, even for a week or two, you're off. And it takes time to get that timing, the pace. It seems like everything is going fast forward out there. Like, how are these guys able to make these passes, these plays? I can barely pick up the puck here. So it's a monumental task, not only coming back with playing, but also it's the playoff drive. Like, here, this is when teams play their best hockey, when teams are dialed in, physical, all that stuff is the exciting part of the year. They're in for a treat, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, you know, it's easier for us to sit here, Yannick, and say, hey, they have no chance. 19 games in 32 days. Look at every single situation we've seen in the league this year coming off a COVID outbreak. Every team has struggled. They've, you know, had their season go sideways. Why would it be any different for the Canucks? But when asked about it, Bo today, you know, he said, no, I mean, we're going to play and try to win every game and do everything we can. It's easy to say that, but how hard is it to try to will your way to believe that when you have such a hard task in front of you?
You win the first one, the second one, you begin to believe. You get crushed early, and it's easy to fold the tent. It's that simple. We always play every game to win every game. But you can kind of see it now that they're starting to get a couple of games in hand on Montreal. They're 10 points out. They'll get another game tonight. But again, you start winning some games, you can see it, you can feel it. And that'll take over. But again, it'll be very, very telling the first couple of games here. How did they do? Do they manage to win? What happens? Do they lose? Do they fall further behind? Even before they were shut down, we knew they had to win a bunch of these last couple of games in order to get in. That hasn't changed. But again, now they have even more adversity. So the first couple of games here will be very telling as to, I think, the mentality and also the spirit of the team, where they're going to go from here.
Obviously, the start of your career, you know, the Canucks were pretty. You guys were really good, and you know, then after that era kind of started to wind down. Like, how was it the first year that you weren't a part of a playoff team? How was the end of the season?
You didn't really believe it. It was weird because we'd been embedded in it. Yeah, I'd never been out of the playoffs come until that 13-14 season, and we still believed right on till the end that we could do it. Same team, all the same guys that I looked at 3 years earlier, and we were in the Cup final. So it wasn't like what happened here, but it's a little bit of disbelief, like what's going on. You didn't quite believe that, okay, we don't get a chance this year. What's going to happen now? It's demoralizing. You want to play in April, May, June, if possible. That's when it's fun. That's why we train in the summer. That's why we play hockey in our basement, in our driveways when we're little kids. It's not to play 82 regular season games and then go home and have a great summer, work on my handicap on the golf course. No, we play to play that game 7 overtime and score the winning goal. And when you don't get to do that, it's sad. And it's very disappointing, especially right when you're in the middle of it. Summer rolls around and you start training for the new season. You put it away, but like right down to the end there, it's not a fun part.
And there's the added complication, of course, this year with COVID and everything that it's brought to this team. So, you know, a very delicate situation about the Vancouver Canucks. You brought up the 2013-2014 season. We had Ryan Kesler on the show earlier this week. And that year in 2014, there was the Ryan Kesler trade rumors where he talked about, you know, potentially getting moved to Pittsburgh. It looked like it was a done deal. He had a long trade list, about 7 teams, and then it didn't happen. Do you remember that ordeal and being in the locker room with him when that whole situation played out?
I remember he was a little bit upset of not getting moved. But again, it was one of those instances. Like, it wasn't like it was a complete hit us from the side. We knew he kind of wanted out. Again, it wasn't right up until the deadline that it was put into words. Yeah, I want out. I want to get traded. So it was a little bit, it was kind of the first dominoes to fall there of the guys that left the team. But again, he played every game to win it. I'd say it would probably been a different feeling if you could have seen it in his game, if you could have seen, okay, this guy doesn't give a rats anymore. He's not blocking shots. He's not just playing for himself, but there were none of that. He came to play every night, did his best to help the team. So it was more so the fact that, okay, this is probably the first dominoes of a lot to fall.
Well, what is it like, though? Like, one of the things that, you know, we've seen oftentimes and, you know, people get asked about is how aware are players of management decisions, ownership decisions, that whole entire culture? And, you know, questions like that have arisen this year with how the offseason went. When it comes to involvement from management, ownership, and how players feel about that, how in tune are players to that? And how much does that matter offseason to offseason, what the team does and how, you know, players feel about the direction of an organization?
Not very much. Quite a few trades or like right out of the left, especially the in season. You hear all the rumors in the summer, during the draft, free agency, moving guys around and stuff like that. But again, you have no bearing on what's going on. I remember coming off the ice one day and Samuelson, which has been a huge part of our team for 2.5 years. Complimenting that top six, filling some very big shoes. Boom, moved. He's traded. He's not here anymore. And it's like, okay, well, what happened here? I thought we were in this together. And you bring a new guy that's going to come in and fill some big shoes. And he's like, oh, what is this guy about? So it's a lot of time, especially with the guys that have no movement, no trade, all these things. It hits you. From a clear sky, if you will.
Was ownership very involved while you were here in Vancouver?
I have no clue. I have no clue. Not that I know of. Like, that's it's always the same answer. It's above my pay grade. again, what goes on behind those doors? We're not trivia till in any ways. Yourself, very little. I didn't know who I was traded to for about 2 hours after I was told I was traded. There were still a lot of times where you're in the complete dark, and that's myself. So in terms of other players, they don't let you in on any of those decisions or what goes on. It was always nice when you got Gilman was especially good at that. He'd come down and share stories, not right from what had happened, but like a little bit in the past. Then you got a little bit of a look into what was going on and the things and stuff like that. And then guys ate it up because it was not something we were trivia to in a lot of times.
You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by Yannick Hansen. Yannick, it's a tough situation for the Canucks right now, but amidst this tough situation, there's going to be opportunities for some young players, kind of like Cole Lind, who's been on the taxi squad. He'll probably get a pretty decent look here and play some games down the stretch. You were in a similar situation. You made it in for the playoffs in your first year with the Canucks. When you watch a player like Cole Lind and the opportunity he has, what's the focus of that player when they're trying to find a spot that they can stick in?
Yeah, it's be seen, make yourself noticeable, obviously in a good way, not in a bad way. But it's showing your strength, maybe going a little bit outside your bubble as well, showing you can do a little bit extra, anything that gets you noticed, gets you stay around. We've talked about this in the last couple of calls as well. What do these guys have to play for if they're out? Well, we're playing for next year, for jobs, for opportunities. You mentioned Cole. Who's going to be next in line when it's a full team and we got injuries? You want to be that guy. When I was in Winnipeg, I wanted to be the first call up. 10 other guys wanted that job as well. So you're always trying to improve yourself, put yourself in the best spot. So somebody needed, it's your number that gets called. And again, you do that by standing out, showing that you can play at this level, you can contribute, you don't hurt your team. And again, whatever role you get brought into, you fulfill that role. Not everybody is expected to come in and score 25 goals. If you're coming in here to provide some energy, make sure you're bringing that energy. Make sure you're finishing your checks. Make sure you're getting the puck out in the blue line. Do whatever you do well, but then excel at it.
Well, you know, and one of the things is there's a lot of ups and downs for young players. And like I'll go back to your, first appearance, and it was in the playoffs back in 06-07. You played 10 games that year in the playoffs. Then the next year comes around, and it didn't go the way you wanted. You only ended up playing 5 games in the regular season the next year. But then after that, obviously, we all know you had a great career with the Canucks. But how was it navigating those ups and downs, feeling like, okay, now you've arrived, then realizing, no, I'm not quite there yet. I still have to do more work to earn my spot.
Yeah, I probably thought I had it made after that playoff. And I don't know if I took it too easy in training camp or whatever it might be. But I definitely wasn't at the right level where I needed to be. Again, different times. Physically, maybe wasn't there yet either. But again, it's not a straight line to the NHL, at least not for majority of the players. It takes trial and errors. You're going to get some bumps and bruises along the way, but you got to find a way to overcome it. And yeah, it's not fun to get sent down. It is not fun to get called into Jim's office and say, hey, we don't need you anymore. Go down, work on your game, do whatever it is you need to do down there to earn another shot here. It's not fun to hear. Vancouver is where you want to play. This is where you're striving to be. So it's a slap in the face pretty much every time you get sent down. Then again, when you get the other call, you get called in and say, hey, we need you now. You feel like $1 million because now you're getting a shot again. And then like, okay, these guys, they want me around here and then better prove myself now.
Yannick, we appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the weekend.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
There is Yannick Hansen, former Vancouver Canuck, joining us. And this one comes in. Yannick, one of my all-time favorite Canucks, on the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can always text in 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line to get in touch with the People's Show. And you heard it from Yannick there. You know, sometimes, a lot of times, players out of sight, out of mind when it comes to the connection with management and ownership.
Yeah, I mean, it all comes down, every player is different, right? There are players that are completely involved, and there are other guys that aren't quite as in tune, right? And it all comes down to which guy you talk about. But, you know, it's interesting to hear that from Yannick, and especially back and, you know, how they were on an ascension for the most part up until, you know, obviously, you know, later part of his career when he ended up getting traded at the deadline. But yeah, there are players that simply don't pay as much attention. As much as we want to make it about that, a lot of guys simply don't. There are guys that do, but like Yannick mentioned, sometimes you're not even sure who's getting traded and why until it happens.
Yeah, I think a part of it has to do with role on the team as well, right? Like if you're saying, hey, I want to stay in the top six, or I am a guy that is maybe a fringe player or trying to work my way into the lineup, you're saying priority number one, getting the job done, making sure that I continue to play in a way that I'm in that top nine or top six or a top four defenseman. As some other guys, if they have a little bit more clout set, as you know, they're gonna be wanting to know what's going on, right? They feel like they have a little bit more ownership of the team, and therefore they want to know what's going on. They want to know where they fit in. So I think it's a part of it is also mentality, but also role within the team. How much clout do you carry, and where do you see yourself? If you're a leader, you probably want to be a little bit more invested. Whereas a guy that's saying, "All right, I got a job to do. This is a tough organization or team to be in right now, and I got to make sure I cement my spot." Every guy has his own kind of prerogative in the sense of where they stand on the team.
It is the People's Show. Dan Riccio, Randeep Janda, Satyar Shah. Coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, we got not saying, just saying. We'll also get in more on the Canucks return and talk a little bit more about the players we might see, and also those we might not see returning when the Canucks get back on the ice Sunday against the Maple Leafs. Also, we'll discuss Randeep's new business venture. Venue, a.k.a. the old Plaza, is on the market. Apparently, Randeep is interested. Or at least you've already put your down payment on.
A-Rod bought the Minnesota Timberwolves. I'm making a move on Plaza, all right? I'm making a move on Plaza. You heard it here first.
That's how you're going to convince J-Lo to date you?
You got to start somewhere. You work your way up, boys.
I own a nightclub. Yeah.
Godspeed.
You got to start somewhere.
Can you wear like a really flashy suit and like not have the collar done up? It'll fit the mold perfectly, Randeep.
No, I got style sense. Come on now, okay. Reach. I can't buckle on that.
Fair enough. It's Dan Riccio, Randeep Janda, and Satyar Shah. 4 o'clock hour is coming up. Hey, golfers, get great Vancouver golf for less. Go to discountgolfcard.ca for all the details and to order your Vancouver discount golf card today. It's the People's Show on Sportsnet 650.